welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, Rob Greaves with you once again, bringing you the third and final part of the remarkable story of 88-year-old Kate Kennedy. We've learned that Kate was born in the Depression years, learned the value of hard work and the importance of family. She has successfully transferred the lessons that the Depression and war years taught her into today's world, and in doing so has successfully balanced out career and family. Commencing work in hardware publishing from the late 1940s right through to the end of the 20th century, she has been as successful in her career as she has been in raising a family with her husband Ron. This week, Kate concludes the story and, like any good publisher, ties up the ends very neatly. There are so many stories to come this week, but the story that really touched me was that on the passing of Ron, who died of an aneurysm just 9 days short of their 62nd wedding anniversary. So much to listen to, so much to share. Let's pick up with Kate talking about the trade missions that she went on.
But then there was a time when England was looking to boost the business that they were doing, the trading they were doing in Australia. And they had these trade missions, which they did right around Europe, various countries, and each year they would host, the various manufacturers would host a trade mission. So they decided that they would like to tackle Australia, and they would take 20 of their largest customers to try and boost sales.
Right.
So they took 20 men to England, and I went with them as trade, and I did that twice.
Goodness.
And then I did a couple with the garden show to England. So all told, I had quite a lot of trips there. I did a trade mission in America, and that was very interesting. And one was just purely a getting to know you thing, which was marvellous. They took this trade mission and I went with them. But we were able to work with a lot of Americans who would be put in for the day and work with them for the day. And that was very interesting.
You enjoyed that, obviously.
I enjoyed that very much.
Yes.
With England, we went and saw the manufacturing, and that was really, really hard work.
How do you mean?
Well, you'd get to a Heathrow, and someone from the mission would come in and say, "Now, you're being hosted by a group of people who want to show you what they're doing. They will not only host you in their manufacturing outlets, they have also designed a very interesting social program, and you are expected to attend them."
Ah.
And that was just...
Oh, yes.
That was hard going. You were taken to your billet, which was great. You know, the facilities and hotels and motels were wonderful. And we would have breakfast and have to be ready by 8. Yes, I know, you're beautiful. I hope you know that's the dog I'm talking to. Hear the footstep.
Oh.
We'd be ready by 8 o'clock in the morning and taken to, if they were a very big manufacturing complex, it would be a whole day, and otherwise it would be 2. So you'd have the morning there, had lunch and go on to the other. Back to the hotel to shower, get ready, be downstairs, say, by 6 o'clock.
Goodness.
And then you'd be taken to your social function, which would get you back at midnight.
To start again the next day.
Went on and on and on.
But people who don't understand the intricacies would be going, "Oh, look at this, you're travelling all over the world having one big holiday."
Yeah. Yeah. But I'll tell you, and to do that, because we were on a shoestring, I had a journal ready to put to bed before I left. I had left as much editorial as possible for the next one. And because nobody could do it, they would send me the list of advertisers for me to do the imposition and send
Good
it
Lord.
Back to
send
them.
Send it back. That's doing it the hard
it
way.
It was really hard work.
Mm,
yeah.
Indeed.
That's when you take on so many so many hats, so to speak, really.
I find I really inside me need to ask you, how did this affect your relationship with Ron? Because
it didn't worry him at all, because which I must tell you, not the English trips, but everywhere I went with John Dangs, which would mean I went to Tasmania a couple of times, we went to Adelaide, we went to Sydney, we went to New Zealand. They realised that their wives were included in these celebrations and conferences and thought it wasn't fair for me to be on my own, so they took Ron along too.
Oh, excellent. Well, that, and appropriate.
So that was so wonderful because he was in on all of that and he got to know so many of
my people. Of course he would have been too, and he felt very comfortable.
But the British things were a thing apart. But he got to Hawaii with me. So
you had some. Did you find some time for yourselves? You know, like
I used to get really mad because there was a wonderful program for the wives, and I was stuck with the fellas working.
The time it didn't pay off.
I was human, after all.
Of course, absolutely. Did you see enough of the countries that you went though to sort of have lasting memories?
Yeah, actually, because I worked so mad, I reckoned afterwards I left Melbourne and we went to Sydney and we stopped over in Perth. Went to Sydney, but there was a delay. That's why we had to stop over in Sydney. So although, we were supposed to be on our way, don't even remember what caused the delay. Yeah. We went to Perth to pick up the Perth people. And then we went on. Well, that is the last I remember till we touched Heathrow. Good I'd Lord. Worked for 18 days without a break.
Wow, you were
I slept all
exhausted.
The way. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm.
But I worked to the stage of, as I say, I put one to bed to be printed. I had one well on the way, and I always said to my boss, I'm taking a week off when I finish. And I would book myself into a tour. So yes. I then, when you ask me, did I get a chance? I gave myself the chance.
Great.
I took a week holiday and, went.
So was that enough for you to form an opinion in terms of what country you found most delightful?
My grandparents came out from England, and of course my grandmother was born in Australia, but she still called England home, the same as her parents did.
So there was a connection with that, wasn't there?
Yes. And my first trip to England, which was one of these missions, I got out of the plane and I said, I'm here at last. That to me was something that I knew I had to do before I die. Mm. I said, I must get to England, because it was just inbred in it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And from then I felt so in tune with England.
Mm. So how did it come about that you actually eventually retired? Yeah. Was it a conscious decision, or did, were you...
Well, I had worked very hard for a very long time. I thought 60 was a fair go.
Mm.
And I had my mum at the time, and I looked after her through lots of sicknesses.
Right.
And operations, and I thought, Ron will be retiring in 5 years. I think I'd like to get my life in order before he retires. It was a conscious decision.
Good, yes.
But I didn't really retire, because a lot of the people that I'd worked with said, would you like to do some work for us? So I freelanced then until I was 71. That was when I did my last thing and decided it was time.
That is an amazing achievement. And I can tell you, those of us who are in the 60s, and I'm talking about myself, are not all that happy what we hear currently with, people now should be looking at working on to their 70s. I'm going, okay, I'm 66, I'm starting to feel this a bit now. Do I want to be working when I'm 70? But you're an example of how you can do it.
Yeah, and it was great. I think the first one that came along to me was the Lockwood people.
Mm-hmm.
I knew them very well. Doug Lee was the advertising manager, and he lived quite locally, and I was good friends with Doug. And he said, would you like to do some PR for us? I said, yeah, that'd be nice. That was just right. And then just through a connection of Wilkinson Sword, who asked me, would I like to go and work with Bryant and Mays, which was completely away from what I was doing. But I loved that stint with Bryant and Mays. I was broken hearted when they went to Sweden.
Yes, well, most of us were.
Yeah. That,
for different reasons, yes.
That was amazing. I got up to their forests and, that was really lovely.
Listen to older voices, where stories from the past find a home in the present. I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with Kate Kennedy. And Kate, is reminiscing about the last part of her working life.
And then I freelanced for Mitre 10 and their Thrifty Link. I had been with John Danks, but I knew that I couldn't do both.
Yes.
So I had to resign from John Danks and concentrate on Mitre 10. And through that, one of the men who were with Mitre 10 went to AMCAL and I did something for AMCAL.
Goodness me.
But I was never really in tune with AMCAL. I must admit I was hardware through to the bone.
Of course.
Really,
well, you're talking about a long history of association, aren't you? Yeah. It gets inculcated into you.
Yeah.
Yes. Have you totally retired now? Mm. I'm not taking anything for granted. Have you totally retired now?
Oh, yeah.
You have? Okay.
Well, retired in that I don't just lounge around home. As a family, we've always been involved in hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And Mum was with Prince Henry on the Caulfield Auxiliary. And although I was working, I always did my handwork and, you know, helped alongside. When I retired, I had then started to do a lot more with Prince Henry. And I really got to like doing a lot more with the hospital. But then we decided to come over here.
And here being Bentley?
Over to Bentley.
Yes.
Ron was still working and Ross was still with us then. And I thought, well, we had word that Prince Henry was going to close. It was happened in a most awful manner. We were at our annual meeting and all the wonderful awards were given out and they got up and announced and said, this will be your last annual meeting. Oh, and nobody knew.
Oh, that's...
That was awful.
That's a terrible way.
Even the heads of the auxiliaries that had raised thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands, did not know until that announcement was made. And we were coming over here and I thought, well, I might as well join the local auxiliary. So I've been doing that ever since.
And who are you with at the moment?
I'm with Moorabbin Hospital.
Right.
Which is now the cancer centre for Monash Medical Centre.
Yes.
And I've got a wonderful lot of friends. I'm not the oldest there. There's one beating me by a few months. Yeah, they're great. So we work very hard to fundraise for equipment that they're not getting through their funding.
One of the perceptions, I won't say everybody, but generally in the community, is that when people get older, and I'm talking even 60, let alone 70 and 80, that their usefulness is somehow over because they've gotten old.
Mm.
Which, I mean, apart from the fact that quite obvious from your story, you haven't actually physically done that, you've kept going. What would you turn around and say to these people?
Get out and do something. People say they're bored. I have a sister-in-law, I used to admire her. Her boys dared say that they were bored. She'll say, if you're bored, you can always go to bed. So I soon found something to do. I probably lose patience with people.
Because there is
just
a lot,
so much to do.
Isn't there?
And look, if only you knew, we don't do it now. We used to have a kiosk there. And we'd have a trolley and go around the wards to the patients who might have come without their cake of soap or something
yes,
like that.
Yes.
And you met a lot of wonderful people there. One lady she has stayed in my mind, and I can still picture her sitting on the side of the bed with, you know, the turban because she'd lost her hair, putting on her makeup and making herself look really nice. And I thought, what wonderful faith you've got that, you know, you'll make yourself look pretty even though you
what
may
you've
not
been through. Commit.
There was
yes.
another lady I took some things to and she said, oh, I'd like some tissues. She said, you know, I really think you girls are wonderful. I love what you're doing. And she said, when I get better, I'm going to join you.
Oh, how good is that?
Well, she didn't get better.
No, but that doesn't matter.
It was just so wonderful.
Absolutely.
That she was so ill.
Yes.
And she thought, I'll do that when I'm
ill. Yes.
No.
Yes.
And one of my favourite things was a man, I don't know, I wish I knew his name actually. He said, have you got any books there? And I said, well, yes, we have, but they're not suitable for men. I've only got Mills and Boone. And he said, I'll have one of those. I said, you will? He said, typesetter. I used to set the typewriter. I'd love to see what they're doing now. Just those little things that come back to you. Another time I went into a ward and there were two ladies there and there was one empty bed. It was a three-bed ward. And one of them said to me, I'll have a packet of tissues and I think it was a cake of soap and something else and a little parcel they'd bought. And they paid for it between them. Would you take it next door? Because the lady that was sharing our room is very ill we don't know whether she'll get better, and we're missing her, but we'd like her to know we're thinking of her. So these two that were suffering with cancer did this, and I delivered it from the girls' theatre. All those lovely little things
One tries not to become overwhelmed by all this, but it's very inspirational.
Oh, yeah, you're not overwhelmed, but you're touched by it.
Yeah,
you really are,
yes.
And you're just so pleased there are people like that in the world. But unfortunately, the things changed up at the hospital and the kiosk closed, so they don't have that service any longer.
But you're still involved?
Oh, yes, yeah. I still go. We have a committee meeting the first Monday in the month and a general meeting the third, and we have our fundraising. We work out a 6-month program always, and we have a trading table at the hospital, at our hospital, the fourth Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go out to the big hospital at Monash. We go out there now 4 times a year, because so many of the services up here were removed when they... I know a lot of people didn't like what happened because it was a community hospital, but the cost of providing every service at every centre
had to happen. That's right.
So I don't see there's anything much better to do than be working where they're providing cancer treatment.
Absolutely.
I haven't told you that we lost our Ross to cancer.
No, you didn't.
Yes, just nearly 7 years ago.
Gosh.
So, you know, I feel...
So there's a personal...
It's a personal thing. I know how cruel it can be.
And when did you lose Ron?
He died 2 years ago. That was an incredible thing too. We were booked to go to my granddaughter's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
They booked at a restaurant, and they were there, and Ron and I were going, and Mark, I don't know, he was over there with them, must have called in or rearranged, but I know that he was with them, he wasn't with us. And Ron had taken the dog for a walk and came back, and then he was outside for quite a long time, and I thought he must be out there playing with the dog. I chilled a bottle of wine and had it on the table ready to go, and the front door was open, and evidently the screen door wasn't closed, and he came in on his hands and knees.
Oh, gosh.
And I said, "Darling, what's happened?" And he said, "I fainted." And because he was crawling, I don't know how I did it. I got him up on his feet and got him into that chair. And I rang Claire and said, "We can't come. Dad's just collapsed." She said, "Well, get off the phone and, you know, ring for an ambulance." Mm. So I rang them. And I know people say, you know, they're slow, they're terrible, and they were absolutely fantastic. I rang and explained, and they said, "Can he talk?" And I said, "No, he's making funny noises." And she said, "Well, look, we'll get paramedics to you as soon as we can, but if you're worried any further, get back to me and I'll, you know, hasten it." So he was then starting to almost choke and gurgle. And I rang back, and she said, "Well, don't get off the phone, just keep talking to me, just tell me what's happening." She said, "They'll be there soon." Well, they came, and they were just wonderful. And eventually, the little dog, she was there with the snout on his thigh.
Oh, she knew
it was wrong. And he was making a funny noise. By that time, Claire had sent Jade over with Mark, and she was wonderful. I mean, she was... just said, "Go and get this for me, Jade," because they knew I was in shock.
Of course. Of course you
would. "Go and get this for me, Jade, go and get that." And she was wonderful with both of the deaths.
Yeah.
So that's funny in a lot of ways, but just I couldn't speak highly enough. She's a normal young person of today, but when the chips were down, she was there.
That's all you can ask for.
Yeah, so we had to get Chloe out of the room because she was getting in their way. And Mark said later, "I've been trying to find out what Dad was trying to say," but he said, "I know what it was now. It was, 'Where's the dog?'"
Oh.
Mm. That's how wedded he was to her. So finally, of course, we finished up at the Alfred, and he didn't come home. And it was an enormous aneurysm, aortic aneurysm, that exploded. And they said to us in there, it was like a bullet wound. It was, if it had been shot, it was... 10 centimetres.
Wow, that's huge.
Huge.
That's very big.
Mm.
Oh, that was a shock for you.
It was awful. I said, well, I've had words to say to Dad, because Dad was completely unconscious in intensive care, and I said, he's robbed me of 9 days of our wedding anniversary. So it would have been 62 years had he lived.
That's quite amazing.
Yeah,
that's
but we had 61 anyway.
You had 61 wonderful years.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of memories.
It's a lot of memories, yeah. And earlier you did ask me if it had affected our lives. He had a wonderful life, really. He, through various changes, just a couple of changes in his career, he finished up at Melbourne Legacy because he was in the Air Force and he was in the Air Medical.
Right.
Well, he had a great tasting for it, and a lot of ex-servicemen went through their hands in hospitals.
Yes.
And he became an advocate for war widows, so he would take up their case with tribunal to get them their war pension. And that went on for over 20 years. When he retired at 65, he was completely lost. 18 months, I didn't know what to do with him. And someone at RSL knew him and said, look, you're in trouble looking for someone here. Why don't you ask Ron Kennedy if he'd come up? So he worked up there then for many years.
It gave him a focus again.
The same job.
Oh,
so we almost had to make an appointment to see each other. Yeah, so he... you know, whenever he got pensions, whether it was with Legacy or up here, you'd think he'd won tats for himself.
Great. What a lovely story.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices. Turning Back Time. Turning Back Time. Turning Back Time. Turning Back Time. Turning Back Time.
Kate, our time is almost up.
Right.
There's one final question I really would like to ask you. Living and dying, every human is born and every human has to pass on eventually. It's the natural order of things, and looking at you with the vitality level you've got inside you, I suggest to you, short of the bus hitting you, you've got many years left yet. So,
my gran had 100 years.
Well, then I have no hesitation saying I think you're probably going to pip gran. But having said that, when that time does eventually come and you pass on, how would you like your family and your friends to remember you? How would you like them to think of Kate?
I suppose just as the person that I am, because there's no hidden agenda in me, nothing. You know, what you see is what I am. I love having my family, which is very small now. We've got one grandson. Mark has a son in America, and he's about to have his 40th birthday next month.
Perspective, isn't it? You're talking about your son's son is about to turn 40.
Yeah, that makes me feel old.
That's the, yes, you can't help that one.
And he has a 13-year-old.
Oh,
she'll be 13 in July. And then Mark has a boy up in New South Wales. And we've got Jade, so that's all. We've got, two great-grandchildren. Mm. We're a small family. And I've got a lovely lot of friends that we meet. But your life changes as you get to this age. You go through your telephone book and find out how many have got across through them because they're no longer with you, or they're in a nursing home.
Yes.
You know, they've got Alzheimer's.
Yeah. Yes.
So much. Your life changes. And right now, I'd made up my mind I would never go to another one of Jade's birthdays, because she's got her friends, Claire's got her friends, and there are no 80s there. None of them.
No.
And no. I thought, I don't think I want to do this anymore.
You've just raised a really interesting issue in my mind. A lot of older people that I've interviewed, I'm talking about people now in their 90s, have said to me, when I've put that question to them about, you know, how do you want people to see you when you die, and I say, look, you know, you've got another few years left, and they've said, no, I hope I don't, because I feel like I'm out of time now in terms of this is no longer my world.
Oh, no. I would never feel... No, I'm too much of a sticky nose. I want to know what's going on.
That, I think, is a really good sign if you've still got that going.
I thought, what'll happen? No, I don't want to go. Next time, you know, when we have an opportunity, I must tell you of some of the wonderful things that when I was with the Hardware Journal, we send a copy of your publication to the National Library, which you must do, but we also had the bound copies going back to 1886, which is how old the journal was when it first appeared here. There is the most fascinating history of Australia that you could ever see. I never had to take a novel to work. I'd just get down one of the old volumes. Calling for the tender to build Princes Bridge. St Paul's Cathedral, the Ballarat Cathedral, bringing fresh water into the Shire of Newcastle in New South Wales. All of these wonderful things are there.
And are these now in the National
Library? They're there in the National Library.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I used to take one out and I'd just browse through it. And some of the dreadful things that people would go to jail for, you know.
Oh, yes. Very crazy.
Bankrupt for £150 and they'd be declared bankrupt because that was an enormous sum of money. There's one that I absolutely loved where the stonemasons that were working on Parliament House had raised the question that they wanted a penny an hour more pay. You know, it's just so fascinating.
It actually puts a real perspective on things too when you read those things,
yeah,
doesn't it?
It does. And they also listed in those old journals the details of the shipments that were coming from overseas. And we even imported nails, things that we take for granted.
Yes.
Timber, because it was so new here, no timber had been cured.
The industry hadn't really, that's right.
I found that absolutely marvellous.
It's somewhat a shame, and I don't think either of us are here to pick on younger people at all, but it is a shame that they don't get exposed, isn't it? Because they tend to think that life is tough now.
Mm.
They have absolutely no idea what really tough is.
It was really tough.
Yes.
Yeah, really tough. I just absolutely gobbled those things up. I thought they were wonderful. Yeah.
But that, in essence, is part of who Kate Kennedy is, isn't it? This insatiable desire to always learn something, always experience something.
Mm.
Kate, it has been absolutely delightful sitting here and just sharing a little of your story with you. Thank you for being honest.
That's been lovely.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.